A question that I get a lot from colleagues is about non-compete clauses, and some of them seem overly restrictive, and it could be because most people, employers think, well, my employees can't afford to fight it, and I'm just going to do what I want to do. So tell us a little bit about, you know, maybe it's different in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, but what non-compete clauses should be like and what's fair and what maybe is not fair.
Right. So this is a big piece of my presentation that I go around to these job seekers groups and explain, because these are people who are directly affected by it often. So I can't tell you about Pennsylvania law. I'm not a member of that bar. I can't say it specifically, but it's my impression that Pennsylvania will enforce a covenant not to compete. New Jersey does it reluctantly. As a matter of its public policy, the courts of this jurisdiction say that a non-compete agreement is by definition anti-competitive. And competition is good for the public, right? You get better quality, better quantity at lower prices if more people are competing for the same precious goods and services, hours, whatever have you. So we know it's not a favored thing, but it will be enforced, say the courts, as long as it's reasonable. And what's reasonable? Reasonable would be, first of all, if you're a mom and pop store, you know, in Hillsboro, and you ask your shelf stocker to sign a non-compete agreement that says for 10 years and anywhere in the world, you are not allowed to do this job, that's not going to be enforceable. I would tell that person, don't you worry. You just go about your business, go to the Wawa, go to CVS, do your thing. If they sue you, you have to hire me, but we will get that thing thrown out for you if need be. And I've had that type of experience, just strange, like, why are they even doing it? I read an article that, I think it was in New York, the McDonald's companies, these different franchises, were having people sign who were just doing frying the French fries. That's just crazy. Mm-hmm. But I think in part, the managers and owners probably are saying, well, if we don't do it and our competitors are doing it, well, we're missing an opportunity. So if it's IBM, they're going to say for 2 years, you can't do this craft, give that confidential information, take that employee or encourage them to go elsewhere, solicit that customer anywhere in the world. It's IBM. That probably would be upheld. So the more important thing to do is that people need to know when you have one of these, and it's going to be, it could be in a handbook, it could be in a policy manual, it could be in a freestanding form that you signed, probably more enforceable if it is. So you leave the job, whether you're fired or you quit, it doesn't matter from the point of view of that clause. If it is valid, it's going to be upheld. So whether, even if they fired you, that's not the issue. But the question then is, what happens? Well, you go to a recruiter. You go to an HR person from a new job. And they say, do you have one of those? You better tell them yes. Because if you don't and the old company is unhappy, they're going to sue you and the next employer. So that becomes a very big deal. So let's say you truthfully answer that question. You were working for IBM. They laid you off. You get a job application accepted from Accenture, great big company, somewhat of a competitor with IBM. I had this case, and Accenture said to this client, we can't take you with this. But if you go back to the old company, see if they will create a waiver for you. And this woman came to me. I explained how that worked. I told her who she had to be in touch with. I said, if you're uncomfortable, I'll do it. But if you can do it, that's fine. They worked with her. They wrote up a new agreement. It basically said, don't go after these six customers for 2 years. And I said to them, okay, you got really good severance, really good severance. You got your unemployment benefits. You got a new job. And you're just not going to work on six client matters for the next 2 years. What do you think? And they're like, where do I sign? The other piece is sometimes somebody gets out of a company in a bad way. It could, let's say, sexual harassment is a pretty good example. And I had this case. This realtor, like a broker, realtor broker, was harassing a woman who was his sales agent, like seriously bothering her and chasing her and making comments to her. She quit. And he said, but remember the non-compete agreement. And she went and her friend offered her a new job. Now, this woman had a disabled husband. She's got a child who she's taking care of. She's not a young person, needed the work. We filed an order to show cause to knock that out. On what theory? That the owner's behavior was so bad, how could he both force her out and stop her from working? That's not fair. By the time we filed it, I get a call from the guy's lawyer saying, we don't want to fight. No problem. She can go work. You know, that's the end of it. So sometimes they have a good ending, but you have to tread carefully with it.
How has the internet changed that? Because some people can work anywhere in the world, like the three of us. So we all work for ourselves. But let's say a web developer who works for a large company, can they be told that, well, you can't work any place because our territory is the world?
I was going to say, it's not just employees who deal with this. It's contractors. Because, I mean, I've refused work because they wanted me to sign one of these things, and there's just no way I was going to sign it.
What you described before is right. If it's overreaching, overbearing, if I were looking at a particular job opportunity and an owner or a manager, I would say, like, what kind of place is this going to be to work if they're already telling me that it's going to be this way to work there? If people are desperate for the job and some people really feel that way, I would say you're going to take your chances. And when it's done, either hope the thing is not enforceable or fight with them over its enforceability. Or if it says, within 25 miles, as I said to the realtor, why don't you go 26 miles? She said, because this is my territory and I don't really want to. And I think it's unfair that this person did that. Well, she turned out to win. She was fine with that, but not everybody will. And they are expensive. It's not a game. You got to do a lot of upfront work, a ton of work, legal memos and service of process and a bunch of stuff. So it can cost people $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 just on a preliminary basis. And that may not end it. Right. If you win the order to show cause, chances are you're going to win the final case. But what if you lose it? What if you're sitting out now for a while? Do you still want to put that kind of money into the process? You could end up with a very unhappy client. So it's a rough game.